Hello and welcome back for another Strength Chat episode. Today I have got a very special guest for you. I last spoke to this guy back in episode 136. That episode is actually one of the most popular episodes I've shared. So if you've not listened to it, 100% go back and check that one out. Today I am joined by a man with the answer to your knee, hamstring, feet, hip mobility issues. He's also started his own podcast, which I would 100% recommend checking out as well. Today, I'm joined by the one and only David Gray. How are you doing?
I'm good, Stephen. Thank you for the G up. I feel I can't. We may as well end the podcast now because I can't live up to that intro.
I just went with the flow. Then I just felt like I don't know. I always joke thinking that I'd love to be a ring announcer. I'm still excited from the box from the Tyson Fury fight.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So obviously it's been a while since we were last on the podcast. Obviously, a lot of time has passed between there. But how are you? What's been happening in your world? What's been an update since we last spoke?
When was it? Do you remember when it was?
Well, that was around October 2020, around there. So yeah. Probably just over a year.
Yeah. So what's been happening? We a good few things probably actually. So I'm in my new kind of gym and clinic now. So I don't think we were here then. So it's just our own kind of private facility. I wouldn't use the word facility. It's just our own gym. And that's where I rehab people and kind of train a few people, but it's mostly rehab. And my clinic here, but like my clinic is kind of just my office because I don't take people in here unless it's freezing cold because I have heating in here, but like we're out in the gym all the time. We're actually moving, we're lifting, we're doing whatever. So that's a bit different. We released probably a few programs and stuff since then. We released a podcast since then. We released a membership site since then. And, philosophies and things haven't changed too much. I think I'm probably a better coach, hopefully a bit smarter, probably changed some thoughts and the way I do things and stuff. But as a whole, I think I just still have a big focus on just movement, helping people move a bit better, feel a bit better. And have been a lot of, I suppose we've kind of pushed a little bit more into the education side of things. That's the membership side. So we have about 450 members now on our membership site, which is just mostly coaches and therapists and people like that. And I just do videos every week for them, like short, sharp education videos, practical, talking about this week we had change of direction ones and stuff like that. So that's probably been the biggest thing that I knew was coming. But just because I was so capped at my time, like where I just couldn't keep taking on more and more clients, I had to just push more into the education space, which is what I wanted to do anyway, because I like talking about movement. I like helping people learn about that. And then we have a physio that's working with us online. She sees a lot of clients as well. And then we have another coach that works with us online in the membership site. So probably, now that I say it, probably quite a few things have changed. The easy answer was not much, but actually, no, there has been a few things.
No, it's been quite good to see a lot of the things that have been developed, and especially with the education side of things and your podcast as well. How have you found that as well? Because, I always ask a lot of coaches that I follow, such as yourself, have the in the trenches coaching and working with clients, but then seem to have that progression to the education side of things and end up working with a couple of other people. How have you found that, especially when you've mentioned that's something that you'd always sort of had thought about or to progress to?
Good question. I found it like relatively seamless in terms of the hardest part for me all along was like when I first released my first program and that got pretty popular and stuff. Like even when I was going to workshops on my own as an athlete 10 years ago, trying to help and fix my own body, I was actually looking at the presenter of the workshop. And I realized very quickly, like, I'd love to do that. I'd love to be there and just, maybe that's an ego thing, but I just loved like talking about movement, or that's your job. Like, so I think that's a cool thing. So that was relatively seamless for us just because I was kind of doing that on Instagram. And it was probably like 50% athletes and gen pop people looking at my stuff, and then 50% other physios are like therapists, massage therapists, chiros, and just coaches, trainers, SSEs. And I was kind of half talking to a bit of both, and they were kind of pushing a little bit more just to be kind of talking a bit more towards the coaches and therapists, or at least like I'm just using a little bit more kind of nuance in my language and stuff like that. But that's still hard, actually, to be honest. But to be honest, it's kind of easier now because I'm not trying to talk to everyone, and my language isn't as open to everyone. Now, I still try and make things super simple when I can, but I can just kind of break things down in a little extra level of detail, which I like to do. So yeah, that's been good. But it hasn't been that hard. It's been good for my own learning as well, because when I, like, if you have a thought in your mind and then you need to articulate it to smart people who are going to be looking at what you're saying, and actually you need to try and make sure you're not saying anything stupid and blah, blah, blah. Like that's been good for me. I think that little bit of education really helps you develop your own thoughts and get yourself really clear about what you think.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because especially when you see the content and the knowledge and experience that you have, you'd think that it would just be I can just say all of this. Whereas I know from like the education meeting that I have with the coaches that I work with, it does make you think, oh well, do I actually know this? And you go back and relearn it, and it kind of pushes you to be better in terms of learning. Exactly what you said there about being able to, you know, articulate it a little bit better and speak about it a little bit more, because, you know, most of the time, you know, there'll be clients out there who want to have an understanding of why they're doing it, what's the progression from it. But I would probably say, you know, a lot of the time they just want to know, is it going to get me from point A to point B and progress from there? With the podcast as well, obviously being a guest on a number of podcasts, how has it been in the presenter's chair? How have you found that over the episodes that you've done?
It's harder, I think. It's harder. That's why I have a lot of respect, I was saying, for you before we came on here. It's definitely harder. I think it takes more energy. Like for me there, I just finished a call with someone 10 minutes before we came on this podcast. I looked, opened my diary. I was like, oh shit, I have a podcast. And I just clicked the link. But like, if we're I presume you didn't do that because you need to be more prepared and make sure I'm ready and all that stuff. So yeah, you have to worry about two people and the Zoom and all that stuff. I just have to worry about myself being on live at the right time. So that's hard. Booking guests is hard. Interviewing someone rather than, well, I try to think about it not as an interview. For me, it's kind of just, I try and just have a chat. I think you're kind of similar there. If I have something to say, I'll say it. If they have something to say, they can say it. But it's tough. It takes energy, but I think podcasting is like is a big deal. I think Instagram stuff, every single time I put up a post, 2 days later, it's kind of gone. It's just gone. Like it doesn't really exist anymore. Them episodes that you have there, they're in the bank, and someone comes across you today, they might start with episode one, which is cool to think that they're going to go on that journey with you as well. And hopefully them episodes are there forever and there's good quality stuff. And I'm really, really bullish on podcasting at the moment. I think, I know everyone says everyone has a podcast and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I still think there's room for a good podcast, just like anything. If you do it well, there's room for it, definitely. So I've enjoyed it, but it's definitely hard work.
Yeah, I think it does come across, because, you know, especially having it as a chat, because I'm sure you might have listened to some podcasts as well where sometimes it's a little bit hard going. It's a little bit, and especially when you're just listening to it, it's sometimes hard to think about what they're saying. Whereas, you know, especially the topics that you're talking about, to be, you know, able to, as though you're sat in that room with them having the chat, which I think you can learn, you can learn a lot more from, rather than having it as like a lecture or something like that where you're taking notes from. But absolutely, I think it's, you know, the content and information put out there, people can, you know, look back and be like, ah, okay, so that was useful, and take from it. And I'm always a big believer in, at least if someone can take at least one thing from an episode or the podcast, at least then it's, you know, it's served its purpose, and, you know, it's been useful. obviously you mentioned there about the, you know, education and, you know, movement and wanting to, you know, help people get a better understanding of that. And I know from last time we spoke, it was a lot more about the importance of the foot and the rehab side of things. Now touching on the movement side of things, and especially working with other coaches, other therapists, what are your thoughts on sort of the movement standards? Because there's loads of movement tests that people can do, and there's loads of thoughts on people need to be this, and this. If they're doing a certain sport, they need this, and this. What are your thoughts or opinions on movement standards, and are they actually needed or not, or are some needed or some not?
I think it very much depends, which is a terrible answer on the podcast, but like, I don't have any movement standards that I look at with any athlete, right? In our lower body basic program, I want everyone in the world pretty much when they do the program to hit like a foam roller bridge, 3 sets of 45 seconds. And that just tells me, like, if they've done that program, then they come to work with me and I say, have you done a foam roller bridge? And they say, yes. And how did you get on with it? Oh, I can still only do 3 sets of 10 seconds. I'm not saying to them, you can't go and run, you can't go and jump, you can't go and squat. I'm just saying, I think when you get to that level, like when you're able to show me that you can do all that other stuff might improve as well. So like, that's one standard. Actually, that is kind of one standard that I have, where people, if they keep tearing their hamstring and then I give them a foam roller bridge and they can do 2 seconds, like I want them to get to 45 seconds there. But it's not a hard like line in the sand at all. It's just I think this is important to hit. Apart from that, like, I don't have the standards for the plyometrics. I don't have strength standards. I just think we could take it where it's like, this could be beneficial if you're stronger, but that doesn't mean you can't do it now that you're not. And I just don't see that being a thing in sport. And then when it comes to assessment, like, how much hip internal rotation do you need? How much hip external rotation? It seems like everyone is different. Certainly in the pain world, like, there seems to be very little or maybe no link to how much mobility you have and how much range of motion you have, or how much pain you have. So I just don't see anything there. And then it's just about how you actually achieve a task. But everyone is different there. So movement standards, it's not something that comes into my mind. I just look at the person in front of me and say, what do you do? What can you do? What can't you do? And what would I like you to do better? And we're going to work on those things.
Yeah. It's like what you said there, you know, when you're speaking with an athlete or a client, of it might be beneficial to do that. You know, if the same things are happening over and over again, mm-hmm. it's not a case of, if you don't do this, I'm not going to work with you. It's just a case of, look, you know, we're going to add that in for a reason. And one of the key things that you said there was, it's going to be beneficial. It's only going to help improve your performance or get you back to where you want to be.
Yeah.
On the flip side of then, have you found, especially with the education side of things and the members that you've mentioned, that sometimes that they can potentially come in with preconceived ideas of, oh, well, I've been working with people and I have this checklist for it, as opposed to, you know, because even though it's a little bit like when you talk about the research side of things, that can be really useful and a guide point, but you've still got to do exactly like what you said, work with a person in front of you. Have you found that coaches and therapists sometimes have a preconceived idea of standards that they should be having?
Yeah, sometimes, like, there's range of motion standards, then there's strength standards, then there's like maybe plyometric standards. Let's take a toe touch, for example. You could just have a standard where you could say every soccer player should be able to bend over and touch their toes, right? But one person will bend over and completely round their spine, get a ton of flexion through their spine, and it looks like they get zero hip movement, like no posterior shift of the pelvis or the hips at all. They don't really get any hip flexion. They just kind of, it's like they just round over a barrel and they can touch their toes. One person will flex their thoracic spine, their lumbar spine won't move at all, their hips won't move at all, and they can't reach past their knees. Another person will keep a completely flat spine and just completely hinge to their hips and do it by getting a ton of hamstring length and touch their toes. So I'm more interested in how you're doing it than what you're doing. And that's the same. You can say the exact same for a back squat. One person's back squat looks like a good morning. The other person can't even keep their heels down. They end up like just driving their knees forward. The other person is like a really nice, quote unquote, like straight up and down back squat. So all three of them could lift the same amount of weight, but one might have very strong quads to do it. One might have very strong glutes. One might have very strong lower back. So then if we're saying that someone should have a 2 by body weight back squat before they do all these plyometrics, what if it's the person that's using their lower back to do the back squat? Or like, I know you'd be using your legs as well, but you're using a lot of lower back. And that, what correlation does that have with how stiff your ankles are going to be when your feet hit the floor? Very, very little. So I'm just saying, some of the members come in like that, but usually they come in after following me for a while and see that we're very like even the workshop, I ran a workshop for some of our members the other day, and they were looking at me assessing someone and we were just chatting about it. And I just picked up on a few things and I just said like, look, notice this, this, and this. And they said, okay, did you, in that squat, did you look at their ankles first or their knees first or their hips first or their spine first? And I just said, like, I just kind of saw it. And I don't really work with that like checklist of things going along the way. Now that's not to say that's right, but I just like to look at the person in front of me, and that's usually my answer.
Yeah, I think that's the thing where it's, especially probably with, because I always go back to, especially with, I can't remember whether I mentioned about this in the first episode when we chatted, an internship program at the gym that I work in, and it's kind of that thing of, it's always looking at exactly that. What do you look at first? And I think it's only, there's that phrase, isn't there? How do you get better at looking at movement? Just watch people move. And it's kind of, if you're looking at the ankles, you might miss something at the knee. If you miss something at the knee, rather than focusing on those, on that one thing, there might be time where there is isolation exercises where you may look at that. But on the whole, like what you mentioned about the squat, how does that look? And then maybe it's a case of, right, okay, so what, how does that feel? Do they feel, because sometimes, and it, depending on what your thoughts are, have you found that sometimes when you try and correct something that actually they say, oh no, this doesn't actually feel quite right. And then just they go back to the certain thing and it's like, all right, okay, so that's what we're working with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's exactly that. And then you need to ask yourself, so firstly, how does it look? And then you're asking yourself, secondly, why does it look that way? So if they do look limited, like what, then you can hone in on an area like, why is there something in their injury history? Is it just how they actually move their body? Is it a kind of a short torso and long legs or whatever? So you can start to look that way. So how does it look? Why does it look that way? And then another question, like, should I even consider changing it or trying to change it? And then if it can change or it doesn't feel right to them, did I actually coach it right, quote unquote, again, to say like, okay, this is it a repetition thing? So they're just saying, no, I don't like it. Should I double down and say, you don't like it because you don't usually do it this way, and I would like you to learn to do it this way? Or is it like, actually, I'm just trying to force a square peg into a round hole, or whatever the phrase is. So there's a lot of questions to ask, and there is no right answer there. It's very hard, but I think that comes with a bit of experience. But even with experience, there's no right answer. It's just like, it's just working with the person in front of you and just figuring it out as you go along. Maybe you don't make big, massive changes. I'm very big on coaching. I do a lot of coaching where like someone comes into me, I coach the squat quite hard, and I nudge everyone towards what I think is like a better squat, presuming they're not like a strength sport athlete. Okay, then you just squat whatever way you can lift the most weight. But I think I nudge a lot of people towards a certain type of squat. I nudge a lot of people towards a certain type of hinge, but I'm not anal on it either. You know, like everyone is different, but I do coach quite hard, but I understand as well that it doesn't have to be perfect in the first session. It's just nudging it forward a little bit over time is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think that's why, I know for me, you know, a lot of the content that you put out there is the buy-in on the coaching side of things, because I think there can be all the variables in terms of range of movement or angle of movement, angle joint, load, reps. In fact, I actually had a conversation earlier this morning about this, that all those things are easier to track, whereas actually the coaching side of things, I know obviously you mentioned there no right or wrong answer, but, you know, if you go in expecting, they're going to say this, this, and this, and then all of a sudden that script's thrown out the window and they say, mm-hmm. actually that isn't how it feels, then you've got to, exactly like what you say, just nudge it along a little bit. Mm-hmm. In terms of the when you said there about if you are correcting things or mentioning that you want the athlete or client to try this, what sort of any red flags or triggers that you think, yeah, actually, do you know what? I've got that wrong there, because sometimes coaches are gonna get it wrong and then be like, yeah, do you know what? Let's scrap that.
Mm-hmm. Pain is the biggest one. So like I think something is better, and we do it, and actually you say, no, that hurts my knee. So that's usually let's not do that then. Let's go back to where we were and maybe do half of what we did or something. I don't know. So that's a big one. Range of motion, like I use my range of motion tests quite a bit, like hip internal, external rotation, not that much, but like if someone can't squat deep and let's say they're lacking hip internal rotation, if I do something, I want to, now I could just check their squat and actually now your squat looks better and I should see improvements. If I think I'm on the right track, I should see improvements within like 10 minutes there. If it doesn't improve, then I'm like, did I coach it right, or is it just not the right thing? So I do get quite quick feedback, I think, from things, but yeah, red flags is just like, it just looks a mess. I don't know, I can't define it. It just doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. Or actually, I was looking for more range of motion here, and actually, I got less. So they're the three big ones. Apart from that, I'd probably, or maybe the athlete just says like, I just don't like that. It just doesn't suit me. Fair enough. Absolutely. That's the biggest one. Let's move on. Let's forget about it.
Yeah. I'm nodding because it's one of those things where I know I've been there of correcting it, and you just get kind of that. I exactly know what you mean. It's not an explanation. It's just that just doesn't look right. They don't mm-hmm. feel it. That's not something that we want to be. That's not something that we want to be aiming for, rather than, you know, because it is going to differ person, you know, person to person. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, especially when you mentioned about the squat, you know, one of the biggest conversations I always have is everyone's squat is going to be slightly different, you know, like what you mentioned in terms of leg length, you know, torso length. When it comes to, you know, if they've had injuries and then they're building the way back in terms of movement, how's their approach in terms of building them back to that? Would it be a case of, when we're looking at their movement, you know, trying to address some of the maybe imbalances or trying to change it around? Or is it to get back to, like, there's some people that might just do a good morning squat, they don't get any pain or anything like that. Would mm-hmm. the goal be to try and improve that movement a little bit more? Or is it to get back to what they were actually doing, if that kind of makes sense?
Yeah, I actually put up a post kind of similar to that the other day. It was with an ACL rehab that I'm doing recently, and it was regards to change direction. And it was kind of like, okay, I said in it, like, rehab is a constant, especially in sport, like especially in field sports and stuff like that. It's going to be so unpredictable. Powerlifting is a little bit easier because you know what you're going to do, right? But like, in change of direction, should I constantly chase better mechanics, like textbook change of direction? I should probably chase some of that. But then as soon as a ball is thrown in and this athlete has returned to play, that's not going to be the thing they do all of the time. So if I've always chased the textbook thing and cued it hard, and then suddenly a ball is thrown in and suddenly they need to change the direction in something that isn't textbook, have they even been exposed to that movement pattern and those joint angles and the load in that way? And if I'm constantly changing chasing the perfect thing, they haven't been exposed to it, and they're probably more likely to get injured. The other side of it is, if they go into a change of direction and it looks really sloppy and I just let it be really sloppy all of the time, maybe they're likely to get injured doing that as well. So it's this constant battle between, I'm going to try and nudge you to where, towards where I think it should be, but also I know that when the load goes up or the speed goes up or competition is in place or there's pressure on, maybe you're going to end up back here a little bit. So you need to expose them to both things, I think, with the back squat. My idea of a squat is a little bit more vertical displacement. So it is a little bit more down. Some people will hinge their squat a bit more. Definitely, as they go up in the percentages, usually it will look a little bit more like that. You just bring more muscles to the party, I think. Yeah. And the barbell on the back is kind of just pushing you into that position a little bit. I'm not a powerlifting coach, so I can't really speak on that very much. I do work with some powerlifters, but it's usually okay, I have an ankle here, I need to clean up, that's getting in my way. I have a hip to clean up, I have a lower back or whatever. And we kind of clean that up and I just kind of release them back into the wild. So I know my place on that, but I try and give them, even if their back squat then is their main lift, if they're doing a different type of squat, then I'll try and work on that more vertical displacement where they just go kind of more straight up and down. And maybe that's enough to get them that little bit more dorsiflexion or knee flexion or hip flexion, to actually are kind of that a better maybe bracing strategy, if you want to say it like that. Maybe that's all they need to then take some of those qualities, 5% of those qualities or 10% into their back squat, and now it's not as hingy. But for the most part, I wouldn't cue that in the back squat. You get me? I wouldn't go after that in the back squat, because now I'm just going to mess up their back squat as well. I'm going to try and say, okay, what's limiting that? I'm going to improve that, and then hopefully I'll see that carrying over.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting, especially when you said there about trying to chase that optimal or trying to get to that point, whereas especially within, powerlifting and weightlifting are probably the only sports where the training replicate the actual competition. Mm-hmm. When we're looking at sort of, especially team sports, if we're looking at hitting a certain standard, but then, like you say, a ball gets thrown in or whatever it may be, how do you respond to that? And, I think I actually saw one of your posts about this, which was talking about, exploring movement. And do you think that trying to hit a certain standard then means that you reduce the risk of not controlling and exploring other movements which aren't necessarily the norm, does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. Are you asking me that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it does. I don't know. You see some unbelievable athletes who change direction. It just looks beautiful all the time. It looks really good. But not all the time then, actually. No, because something else, and athletes just have to figure it out and they do something else. And there is the whole genetics thing as well, which is some people maybe are just more likely to get injured and are not as good or are not as strong. And no matter how much training I do, I'm probably not going to be Cristiano Ronaldo. So then you can blame my poor mechanics on me getting injured, but maybe I'm just every tissue in his body is much better than every tissue in my body. And I could, that a million years of training might not change that. So I don't know. We know on the performance side of things, we know these type of things look a little bit better and maybe can kind of nudge us forward if we move in that direction. But from the injury side of things, is the thing that's people will always say, we're getting so many injuries now. Firstly, I don't know if we are. Secondly, maybe it's just purely because people are faster and stronger and they're just moving at more speed, more velocity, and so they're more likely to get injured. Maybe it's nothing to do with the mechanics or anything side of things. So injuries are just so hard. I can't really speak to it. I just think we have to expose people. We have to work on making them move a little better if we can. We have to have some kind of biomechanical model to aspire towards. Otherwise, we just throw shit at the wall and we have no idea what we're going to do. So I have some kind of biomechanical model in my head around a squat, around a hinge, around plyometric type of movements, depending on what they are, around sprinting and around change of direction. I have that in my head, but I'm not married to it. I understand there's a bandwidth there. And then I have to understand that, especially change of direction, that there is like our kind of chaotic field sports, there is going to be times where athletes just end up in a messy situation. And hopefully I've put them there in some kind of controlled manner in the past, and they know what it's like. Their reflexes and preflexes are tuned up, and their coordination is tuned up, and they're able to share the load throughout the body. Because at some stage, you put a joint in a position, no amount of strength is going to protect that joint, but the force sharing through the body can, if the athlete is able to organize their joints in a certain way that it's not just going straight into that one area.
Yeah. And with that, because one thing you said there of, you know, are athletes just stronger and faster? And, you know, you look back, you know, 10, 20 years ago, and, like, you know, probably sports just across the board, you know, the standard in terms of, I don't necessarily say skilled, because I think there's always been, you know, skilled athletes in whatever sport there is. But, you know, you look at the physicality, like, they're not just footballers or rugby players. Like, on paper, some of the numbers that they're putting out in terms of sprinting, in terms of jumping, and, you know, whatever it may be, they are all round, you know athletes. Yeah. Do you think sort of the scope, if you like, of how much of that movement from the norm in terms of exploring that movement, do you think that's got a little bit wider, so that, you know, we are challenging these movements a little bit more and trying to get them controlled in those areas?
I think it might have got a bit less. I think it might have got more rigid, like where it's just like squat, deadlift, clean, and do a plyometric movement and sprint. I think it's probably gotten a bit less. I think if you put up anything now on social media, like anything that's not in the sagittal plane, you're probably going to get abuse of someone saying, you know, like I was doing ACL rehab with Dinny there, and like we lift, like he's deadlifting, he's squatting, he's changing direction. I've put most of it on Instagram along the way, little reels and stuff like that. So I'm not hiding what we're doing, right? There's no big secrets there. You don't have the exact program, but like you can kind of figure it out, right? So, but like I had a water bag in his hands early on in the rehab process, and he was just doing a small step and just kind of turning the water bag to the right, turn the water bag to the left, just to be exposed to some of them, just so he has to like force them co-contractions and stabilize the knee joint in three planes of motion. Some guy reshared the story and said, this is why his athletes will get re-injured, because he focuses on this stuff and not on the basics. And in the caption, I said, this was after we did like our back squats and this stuff. And it's, so this is the type of thing that people, if you're seen to be explorative with your movement at all, the presumption is that you're one of these functional people who doesn't actually get people lifting. And I think in a lot of cases, the because of like what you said earlier, like the movement standards, like these are the standards you need to hit. It's hard to measure the, like if you have an athlete moving with a water bag around, and in a lot of cases, like they don't need to be doing that. Certainly a healthy athlete, I don't think needs to be doing that, because they're getting exposed to them perturbations, but maybe an unhealthy athlete who isn't playing their sport, maybe they do. So I think them standards, like we're always trying to nudge, like you can measure my back squat has gone up a bit. My counter movement jump has gone up a bit. I'm maybe a little bit faster, but it's hard to measure the other stuff. But I still think the other stuff is as important. Definitely in the rehab process, it's as important. And definitely in an athlete who is this kind of injured, but not fully injured type of athlete, I can play my sport. And they are slightly older athletes. They've done a lot of lifting over their career. That's that like explorative type of movement in the gym for them, where they just step up in a different way, or they lunge and have a rotation with it, or stuff like that. That seems to be absolutely magic for them. And it just gives them, I think it might be like a degrees of freedom thing. They can move their trunk around. They can swing their arms as they do a lunge, rather than being super rigid. And at some stage that becomes really important. But yeah, I think that movement variability in the true sense of the world has probably decreased, certainly in the S&C world.
Yeah, there's a couple of things to take from that, you know, especially with the sharing something of being like, oh, this is why the athlete's going to get injured again. It goes back to what we were saying at the start that, you know, a post that you might put up, it might be gone in a day or 2 days. People lose sight of it, but then they see it and they only see sort of the tip of the iceberg, as opposed to, you know, if they'd have read the caption, if they'd have done a little bit, you know, digging into it of, do you know what, actually, like, there's a little bit more to it, a little bit more to it than that, because there's no way that you can, you know, dive into the ins and outs of all the topics that you put out on social media, because it is a snippet. I was actually listening to a podcast the other day about, you know, a lot of content out there is just clickbait to then get it in, and then it's from there, and then it's kind of once they're within it, there's a lot more blogs or articles or podcasts than that can read, because, you know, there's, especially on, you know, probably Instagram's the main one, there's so much information out there that, you know, it is going to be hard to see all of that. And you said there about the healthy athlete and the unhealthy athlete. It's that kind of thing of who's in front of you. And especially if people have been training for a long time, you know, those small little tweaks, those small exercises that you're adding in, like what you said about the water bag, isn't anything crazy. It's not like balancing on a Swiss ball and juggling, and that's going to be for ankle stability. You know, it's other things that you can use. Do you think that with the foundation of exercises that you've got that will only go so far? Especially when you're talking about sort of older athletes, when we're adding in some other things, because especially for a lot of professional athletes, the bodies may start feeling beat up a little bit. Do you think that's a good option to, like what you say, you know, keep them fresh and, you know, be that bit of magic that they need?
Yeah. I I'm going to double down on what I'm saying there. I really, really believe for some of those athletes, I get a ton of those athletes where they're still playing their sport. They might only be 28, 29, 30, but they could have been playing professional sport for 10 years at this stage, like, are semi-professional or whatever it is, and they've lifted for 15 years and they're just not really getting any stronger, and they don't really need to get any stronger. They're strong. They need some stimulus, like they need to feel load going through their body, but they just like a back squat on a Wednesday, a heavy back squat on a Wednesday when they're playing on a Saturday morning or something, their body just doesn't like it anymore. It's kind of like almost rejecting it a little bit. So it's trying to sneak that load in, but I try not to deload them. I don't want people to think like we're just taking away the load. We're trying to keep in the load, but being not strict on our movement, like you see me doing lunges where it's just a reach the hand. Every time you lunge, you reach the hands in a different direction, or you hold the load, or you swing the load, or you do a step up in a different way. You challenge like these reflexes, you're using different parts of the feet, you're just giving them back access to things that they think, and also the amount of injuries that some of these athletes have picked up, they just lock things away just in their brain somewhere or in the nervous system. It's like, okay, I won't really use this. And you're just trying to like get them moving. Fluidity is probably the word, like rhythmical, get them moving fluidly again. I think it's massive, but you can't measure it. And that's why people don't do that much of it. But yeah, I get a bit of flack over it, like, but I'm not afraid to use it. I'm not afraid to say I use it. Like, I just don't see the need to always have to chase the numbers. When at a certain stage, an athlete has been doing that for 2 years and they're constantly injured, the numbers aren't going up and they're injured all the time. Just take away some of that stuff and add in some different things. And I think the S&C coach, a lot of the time, just feel they need to prove their worth by saying, yeah, his back squat has gone up. But for some people, we just have to admit that maybe runs its course at some stage.
Yeah, it's again what we touched on in terms of that, you know, the quantitative things that you're measuring, the weight, the load, the sprint times. Whereas, you know, ultimately, what is the goal? It's results, and what's the result? The performance that they're doing on there. One thing that you said, especially in terms of they might have lost movement patterns and those sorts of things, or, you know, not being able to have access to that. Do you think that is a combination of potentially the environment and the coaching and the training that they're doing? Or do you think that is maybe a case of, because there is that phrase where, you know, movement can be really easy to lose, quite hard to get back. Do you think it is just that case of, you know, over time that it will just, a lot of things will just be lost in terms of, you know, especially when we're talking about youth athletes, the goal is, you know, play a variety of sports, different movement patterns rather than being under load. And then obviously as they get older, sometimes that can be lost and, you know, more injuries can be picked up a little bit. Mm-hmm. What kind of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's a mix. Like, I think it's a mix. Like, so an athlete, like, compensation is a great thing. Athletes are able to compensate around it. They're unbelievable compensators. And that's what allows them to keep playing their sport for so long. But suddenly, like, when I'm compensating around an ankle injury, a knee injury, and I have a lower back problem, and now something else as well, like, I'm starting to run out of road about the ways I can compensate away from. And my movement just becomes a bit sticky and a bit rigid. And you can actually see that, like, in someone, usually a lunge is a good way. Like, they have an ankle, they've lost a lot of dorsiflexion and pronation, and they try and lunge and they do like this funny thing with their knee and their hip shoots out to the side. So, like, injuries and every injury is leaves a legacy. Like, it's there in the body somewhere. We might not see it, but, like, the nervous system remembers it, and it's there, and it has left a legacy. No matter how good the rehab was, like, those tissues are, well, people say that the biggest predictor of injury is previous injury to that area. So, like, that the injury does leave a legacy there. So injury is a big thing. And then, yeah, I think people being too strict on their coaching is can be a big thing, or not having enough maybe variety in their coaching. Like, so the amount of, like, you could have a back squat, a front squat, a heels elevated squat, a goblet squat, a front rack, a single arm, double arm, a suitcase kind of, or an arm in one load, a Hatfield split squat, a front foot elevated, a rear foot elevated, a lateral kind of squat, a pistol squat, a slouching squat. There's a million squats that you could pick. But people use the same two squats for every session, for one or two squats for 10 years, you know? So, like, there is a lot of options there. I think people just run out of imagination sometimes. Athletes are running into compensation after compensation after compensation. That's when it can become an issue. And then pain is another thing where they just become more and more, the road of where they can go, like, in their body gets narrower and narrower and narrower. And now they're left with five exercises that I can do. These are the five that I can do that actually don't aggravate me. But yeah, it's usually not actually the case. It's just the five that you could do out of the 20 that you know, rather than the 200 that you know. So yeah. I don't have a great answer, but I think we as coaches can be a little bit more open to things, not being as strict with the movements. And then athletes just naturally over time, the lack of variability and long seasons is another big thing that gets, they just get ground down over a long season, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I thought that was a good answer and a good point that you made about, you know, compensation, because, you know, you see, especially watching, you know, some of the rugbyers, rugby unions, the season's coming to the end, to the business end of the season, if you like. People strapped up and, you know, trying to get through what they can. And it's kind of that thing of, you know, exactly what you say, they will get ground down, and there's only going to be at some point, and you kind of sit and think, oh, well, how's that going to hold up, as opposed to, you know, could something have been done a little bit different in the background and behind the scenes? Because, you know, especially as a coach, and the more you learn and read and look and, you know, speak to coaches such as yourself, you kind of watch these games and think, wow, I wonder how long that lifespan is.
Yeah, rugby is the hardest one, because, like, they're getting so much load through their body. Like, they need a suit of armor around them. So they have to keep lifting. So, like, they need that just body mass. But at the same time, so, like, you need to put a barbell on their back, or so you need to put that load through their bodies. But At the same time, they're just getting smashed on the weekend. And so they need like all this, they need that movement variability in the gym. But if you do a full season of like movement variability, they will feel great until like they will play better in their games. Probably they will feel great until that one big hit folds them in half completely because they're not strong enough anymore. So that is a problem I do not know how to solve. And I empathize a lot with rugby physios and rugby S&Cs and stuff, because they it's not that they necessarily always want to give them a back squat like the week of a game, which makes their back even tighter and stuff. Maybe it, like a lot of them will say that, but how do you take it away from them?
Yeah, it's interesting because especially as a rugby fan myself, it's kind of interesting seeing, you know, you touched on it at the start, people are a lot bigger and stronger, and rugby went through a phase where they just seemed huge, like especially in South Africa, like how they must have grown them on a farm somewhere, because it's kind of like how the size of these blokes. But then it was a case of they weren't all necessarily big, they were still big, but then all of a sudden they all became really powerful and really fast, which,
yeah, you know, 6'7" wingers, like,
yeah,
yeah, that's a dangerous combination.
It's nuts. What one thing, again, a little bit of a tangent on there, but you mentioned about, you know, a previous injury that is risk of, you know, reoccurring injury. And what came to mind, I actually went to go watch some Premiership rugby over in Manchester. And one of the players came on, you can see he had strapping on his knee, and it turned out when you read in the match programme that he'd actually had a knee injury, and this was his first game back. And you could see that he wasn't quite confident stepping off, you know, one leg, as opposed to, I remember watching him a couple of seasons ago, he was flying, he could do anything. When we're talking about getting those patterns back and, you know, the injury leaving a legacy, how much sort of, is that going to impact their performance, and will they ever get back to that? Or is it a case of they then need to change how they are as a player and manage their expectations of, right, okay, it's a little bit like with anything, you know, you mentioned about powerlifters. All right, we can't squat. Really good opportunity to then PB our bench press, because that's things that we're focusing on. Is that the same mentality when it comes to athletes that are playing team sports?
No, I don't think so. I wouldn't have any clients if I told them you're not going to be as good as you were before. Every athlete I focus, my like goal immediately is I'm going to make you better than you were before, or I'm going to help you, or want to be part of the team or whatever that makes you better than you were before. And often that is the case. That like definitely is the case, because they get to like reevaluate everything they were doing if it's a longer injury or something like that. So Dini is 35, he's going back playing a decent level of hurling. He should be better than he was 2 years ago. I think he should be faster, he should be stronger, he should be able to change direction. Not right away, but he should be. And that's my goal for him. And that's his goal as well. No, they just need more reps usually. And like you've probably seen an athlete there that's been rushed back a little bit fast because the team probably needs him, you know. So I think no matter how good the rehab was or is and how much time you give him, first game back, he's just going to look a bit underconfident and a bit rusty. And it might not look like that in training at all, but then there's a crowd and all this stuff. Actually, some of the time it's the opposite, where in training it still looks a bit rusty. And then you see them in a game and some athletes are just like, yeah, this is what I was built for. This is what I live for. And they just step up to the level. So no, I think we should be aiming to make them a lot better than they were before. And it just needs reps. And that's what I was kind of saying the other day, where Dini was asking me about change of direction here. Like, what cue can you give me? I'm not feeling as springy as I was there when I hit that cone. I'm like, you don't need cues. You just need reps. You need reps and reps and reps of something that you haven't been doing for the last 8 months. You need more reps of it and more exposure to it, and it will come. Like, I trust the body there to figure it out. I'll give you a cue when I need, but I'm not going to try and replace the lack of 500 reps over the next 2 months with a cue. I need you to just get your reps in. If it's not cleaning up, then I might give you a cue.
Yeah, I'm really glad you touched on that there, because it is that when people get an injury, it's like, oh no, what's going on? Whereas actually, you know, probably from an athlete's point of view, if they're struggling, I get what you're saying about, you know, the first game back, but you want to be better than what you've been, and exactly like what you've mentioned there. If people had injuries, then people would never return back to sport. People would never just, oh, well, that's it now. That's everything done.
And in the past, like, take an ACL injury, my dad will tell you, like, when you're watching Premier League game or something, someone goes down with their knee and you're like, definitely ACL. And he's like, he always goes, oh, that's the end of him. And I'm like, no, it's like, in your day, maybe the end of him. Now people are back so quick. Now, maybe some of them are coming back too quick and stuff, but like Virgil van Dijk came back, doesn't maybe look quite the player he was, but like, actually now maybe he's moving up through the gears a little bit. He's going to be playing in the Champions League. I'm not a Liverpool fan, by the way. He's going to be playing Champions League semi-final. He's played a full season. And like, he's not young either. I think he's 30 or 31 or whatever. There's not that much of a difference in him. And I think maybe it's just, he's just a year old or whatever. But like, athletes are getting back. There's very few injuries now that are like career ending or stopping them getting back to where they were. It's usually the accumulation of injuries that actually takes away that special factor that they had, that little bit of speed, like you're on your fourth hamstring injury and that's what does it, or like you've gotten continuous knee injuries or your lower back constantly. That's what takes it away. One big injury usually isn't the thing. Them continuous niggles are a mess. Well, more than a niggle, but continuous like 4 weeks out, 5 weeks out with a hamstring, they're a mess. And actually, I know as an athlete, a very average athlete myself, I actually stopped sprinting. I don't know if I realized that at the time, but like I was never as confident in my body again to just really sprint and hit change direction as fast as I could. And I just adapted my game. And is that a rehab problem? It probably is. It probably was, to be honest. I wasn't just pushed or exposed to that as much. And your body will usually tell you if it's confident or not. Like an athlete, my athletes will usually tell me, I am ready to push on to the next thing. They're not asking me because they know, because we've exposed them and we've pushed them hard at the previous thing. So yeah, I'm going on a bit of a rant there, but
that's good. Cause it is that thing of, you know, when athletes are rushed back or, you know, there's something happening where they're re-injuring that same thing. I think that's a lot more noticeable than they have an injury and then they come back, which, you know, goes back to, you know, right at the start when we started this chat in terms of, you know, are we coaching rather than meeting standards? What does the athlete need? The coaching side of things rather than just, you know, looking at them quantitative markers. Quite a lot of topics covered there, a few tangents thrown in, yeah. But as usual, I asked it in the last episode when we chatted, but for everything that we've spoken about there, what would be your take home points or words of wisdom?
I don't know. I'm just gone big on the coaching side of it. I've gone so hard and so bullish on like coaching, not just like sets and reps. Actually, like, give people, if you're with an athlete for the first time, a younger athlete or whatever, I know it's easy to throw a barbell in their hand and just go and whatever, and that's fine, but like if I can spend 20-25 minutes in a session coaching, which I did this week with a guy, right? So he came over from Switzerland for 5 sessions, and one session all I did was hinge work with him. And I was like, forever, you are going to do your hinge work in this way. And like, it doesn't matter if it's a deadlift, an RDL, a kickstand RDL. Like, I'm going to show you how you can hinge in the best way possible to load your glutes and hamstrings in the best way possible. And again, I know what I'm talking about. Like, earlier on, we were saying how everyone is different. And it was the best way, what I thought, the best way for him, right? So just, not for everyone, but the best way for him. And we just went over it and we got it right. And then the next day it was like, now we're going to talk about the squat. And I could have got 70, 80% of the results or the benefits by just giving him the barbell and saying, like, here you go. And we used the barbell, but like not coaching it as hard. I've gone so hard on like really getting good at my coaching, getting clear, actually coaching athletes, teaching them what you want them to do. And now I have, for the next year with that guy, I have almost don't need to coach him now, because he knows what I want. It's just like, remember this cue and that, rather than half coaching something or not even really coaching something in the beginning in the first place. And then we constantly run into problems for the next 6 months because we never were clear on what we wanted, right, what we wanted in the first place. So that's my big thing at the moment. And maybe that's just on top of my mind because that was this week, but I got big on coaching. Same with my plyometrics, same with my change of direction. I'm taking my time with things. And the more I go on, the slower I'm going with things. And that just seems to progress people so, so much faster. So coaching, not just sets and reps, and writing an exercise on paper or an Excel spreadsheet. You can write an exercise, you can give it to 50 different people, get them to video it and send it back to you. I guarantee you're going to see 50 different things. So that's my words of wisdom, if you could call it that. Slow down and actually coach. And coach hard early on, you'll need to coach much less going forward.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's some really good words of wisdom there, because, you know, and it's on topic with the conversations. You know, I always like to try and get episodes that have been conversations that I've either had in the gym with clients or with other coaches. And mm-hmm. It is kind of that thing of, you know, how do you get somebody, like what you touched on, how do you get somebody to be better than what they were, you know, before they get injured? Well, we can't get them stronger because they've got an injury. So what else do we focus on? They may potentially be able to get stronger or faster, or it's that emphasis on the coaching. And exactly what you said there, you know, I think sometimes there's always that thing of, you know, not saying enough, too many coaching cues, whatever it may be. But it's kind of that thing of, you know, if you put all that groundwork in first, mm-hmm. then like you say, it can get a little bit easier as it goes on, because they've got mm-hmm. that foundation of movement. And probably the biggest thing, they understand what they need to do.
Exactly. And coaching doesn't mean over coaching or over cueing. It's just being very clear on something and actually working on it and saying, yeah, that was good. Like, I shut my mouth when I need to, but we're still clear. We both understand what we're trying to achieve together. So I definitely don't mean overcoach. I just mean be very clear on what you're trying to coach and take your time and actually coach it. And then you just changed. Honestly, I really believe the athletes, if you look at a team of athletes all lifting together, the people who have been coached early on how to actually squat, it serves them for the next 20 years of their lifting.
Yeah.
The people who've been coached how to deadlift, it serves them really, really well. Now, some people just get it. Don't bother coaching. They just get it. Or the people who don't get it, coach them. Slow down and coach them. And that's a big deal for an athlete or any person. I really believe that's a big deal. So yeah, definitely with you on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot, David, for taking the time to jump on. Really enjoyed chatting with you the first time. It was awesome chatting with you again. For anyone who you know, hasn't listened to the first episode, as this is the first time hearing from you, where could people find you, reach out to you, or ask you questions, or get involved in the programs and the education that you've put out there?
So David Gray Rehab, Grey, on Instagram is probably the best place, because that's just where I post stuff and you can see it straight away, and yeah, either like it or you don't, kind of thing. And the podcast is the DGR podcast. Still need to probably find a better name for that one, but that's what it is for now. And then the website is the same, David Gray Rehab. We have programs where initially meant for kind of athletes and gen pop and stuff to do it on their own. And then we just ended up with, I think we've sold like 10,000 copies of Lower Body Basics now. And I would say 70% of them are coaches and therapists who bought it and did it themselves. And kind of like, we're like, oh, I like this and this and this, and I'm going to kind of start to use that, which is, I actually think that's really cool. So the programs are kind of there. It gives people a taste of some of the early things that we do with our clients. And then the membership site is DGR Interactive, but that's usually people look, to be honest, no one's going to go who hasn't heard from me and listen to podcasts and sign up there. They'll probably go onto my Instagram first, and then if they hate me, they won't go any further. And if they like me, maybe they will at some stage. So I really appreciate you having me on, and good to chat. And I appreciate a podcaster who has been doing it for a lot longer than me, because I know how hard it is.
No, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for taking the time to jump on. Like I say, really enjoyed the first podcast. It was really well received, really popular. And thanks a lot for taking the time to jump on. Thanks a lot to everyone listening, and I'll see you all next week.